CliffCentral.com. Welcome to my podcast. My name is Rosie Mutena, and of course, this is African Pan-African Connect, where I talk about my three passions in life, and that is woman, Africa, and the arts. Today, we're going to be focusing on African global excellence. And in studio with me, I have Dr. Frank Azwani, who's from the African Leadership Academy, who's the VP and the African Leadership Academy Director of Strategic Relations. How are you, sir?
Well done. Yeah, very well, thanks.
It's quite a mouthful we got there.
It is, right?
Yeah.
It is. No, I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
Oh, no, it's only a pleasure. Yes. It's only a pleasure. Anything to do with Africa, I absolutely love. Absolutely. So now, you're originally Kenyan.
Yes. I'm still Kenyan.
Yes. You never know. I mean, you could have migrated to South Africa.
It doesn't matter how many other nationalities I pick up, I will still be Kenyan.
You're going to be Kenyan through exactly. And through. And you graduated as a veterinary doctor from University of Nairobi.
Yeah. So I studied 6 years for that degree, yeah. Which I don't use much anymore.
I was going to say, you work with people now, the two-legged.
and people who talk back at you and like animals. Yes. No, but I studied that for 6 years. It's unbelievable that.
But what was your decision? Was it growing up? Did you always love animals, or was it a parental pressure? Like, okay, become a doctor, and you're like, sure, I'll become an animal doctor.
So actually, it's interesting. You know, I think I two things. Mm. One, I was a very science student when I was in high school, and then secondly, typical of many African families, you tend to have probably not many people who in your family who've gone to university.
Right.
Okay. Mm. So I had a cousin of mine who was also studying veterinary medicine, and he was a big influence in my family.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was a factor in that. And, but also, you know, my parents owned a farm. Mm. So there's a bit of small farming that they did. So multiplicity of factors, but in essence, you know, also at that point in time, I didn't know any better, to be honest with you.
Yes. And you just did it and you followed
exactly,
through.
Exactly.
And then when did you leave Kenya? What was your next destination after Nairobi?
So after I finished my veterinary school, halfway through my veterinary degree, I decided, you know something, it's not something I really want to do, because I found out that once I experienced clinical medicine, it was not in line with me as an individual. I'm a very balanced person. I kind of want to be able to do what I need to do, but also do what I enjoy doing.
That's not
work.
Very, very important.
Exactly. Yeah, so that balance is important. So I was playing rugby. I was into sport. I was collecting music.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. And staying in clinical medicine meant that I studied most of my time. Exactly.
There's no social interaction. No,
so I decided I'm going to stay, use my degree to help me make a career. So I joined a pharmaceutical company called Eli Lilly.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed in Kenya after I graduated for maybe 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And after I joined Lilly, I got a chance to go and work in England.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I was in the UK for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved to Switzerland for a year.
Okay.
And then I moved back to Kenya.
Yeah.
And then I moved to South Africa in 2004.
Yeah. And what was, I mean, moving most of your life, you obviously spent in Kenya. What was, how did you handle the transition going from Africa to a European continent?
So, you know, actually, everything happens for a reason, Rosie. Mm. It's just fascinating how, I'm sure many people will relate to this.
Yeah.
When I left Kenya, I was like, I'm not going to come back.
Yeah.
And I'd also had a big thing happen in my personal life. I'd lost my father.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And I'm the firstborn in a family of 5 boys.
Okay.
So typically, you are expected to take care of the rest of the family.
Mm.
And actually, it was very fortuitous that I got a chance to go to work in England, because then I was earning pounds on Kenyan shillings.
Oh, wow.
Because all my brothers were between high school and primary school.
Yeah.
And I was paying school fees.
And how old were you then?
I was 24.
That's quite a big responsibility.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the weekends when my friends were packing their bags going to the coast, I couldn't afford to.
Yeah.
Something I couldn't afford to. So going to England, I kind of thought, let me go. It'll not just be good for my career, but also will just allow me time to carry out my family responsibility with a little more ease.
Yeah.
But actually, it was the best turning point for me. And that was the thing that really grew my Pan-African passion.
Mm.
Because, you know, many a time as Africans, we look at things that are African and we perceive them to be inferior to what the West has.
Yeah.
We don't appreciate enough about who we are and what we have.
Mm.
So
Or where we come from.
Where we come from. Yeah. So let me give you a case in point. So I get to England. So first of all, I get to England. It was January 16th. I've never forgotten. And it was cold. Mm. Okay. So.
And England can be cold.
It can be very cold. Okay. So first thing, there's no one to meet me at Gatwick.
Mm. And you didn't even fly into Heathrow. It was Gatwick.
It was Gatwick. Oh! Okay. So you can imagine. And typically, when we got guests from Europe coming to Africa, we always had someone waiting for them.
Yeah.
Okay. No one waiting for me. Do you know, where I was going to was a town called Basingstoke. Mm-hmm. And was about maybe an hour's ride. I took a cab for an hour because I didn't know any better. I didn't know how to use a train, those kind of things.
Wow.
So first of all, I thought, okay, first things first. Where's the hospitality that we offer? Mm. Why isn't it given in return? So that's the first thing. So anyway, I get to my hotel. I stay the next day is a Sunday. And then Monday I go to work.
Yeah.
And at lunchtime, my colleague said, "Oh, let's walk and go get a sandwich." Mm. And I go down, and when I come back, because of the cold, my skin had cracked. Okay, so this is my first introduction to European winter. But fast forward, I get a house, I move in, and I moved in on a Wednesday, mm. and that Saturday I went and knocked at all my neighbors' houses and said, "Hello, hey, I'm Frank. I'm living across a number 7 across the road, it was on a cul-de-sac. Yeah. I'm living out there, Rosie." I moved out 3 years later. It's as much as I've spoken to my neighbors.
Believe it. They probably still remember, that crazy African man that knocked on our door.
Exactly. But the funny thing was that their kids were always in my house.
Yeah.
Every time I was washing my car, I had 20 kids washing my car with me.
Yeah.
Every time I was having a braai, I'd have kids telling me, "Make for us that African food, pap."
Okay. Beautiful.
Exactly. So I started realizing, actually, not this. I mean, I'd be in a supermarket, Rosie. Mm. We were two black people in my town.
Yeah.
I'd meet my neighbors on the aisle and they just walk past me like they didn't recognize me. And so actually my African identity really came to question at that point in time. And I started realizing there's things we take for granted about our values in Africa. I used to see just how my colleagues at work would be stressing about their teenage kids who are going were running amok with also. I had a friend of mine who had twin girls.
Yeah.
And one of them was seeing a shrink. They were 15. One of them was seeing a shrink because the other one had a boyfriend and she didn't.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. So the penny really dropped for me in terms of my identity as an African. And I realized actually.
And also the values that we taught.
Exactly.
That we think they're mundane, but actually they ground us for life.
Exactly. So I quickly started realizing, I love being an African. Mm. I love my food. I love the fact that I can go to my neighbors, just knock and say, "Dude, I'm bored at home. I'm here."
Yeah, yeah.
I know all their names.
But also, it's also that comforting that God forbid something should happen. You know, somebody, without even you having to pick up the phone and say, "Listen, please, can you just go check on the house or whatever?" Somebody will be there.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So that's where my passion for my identity as an African really grew. Mm. Because you take what you have for granted many a time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I very quickly made up my mind that I was going to come and any future jobs I was going to take would have to be Afrocentric.
Wow.
Okay. And so everything I did after my European stint was really to ask myself, okay, so
how's it going to add value?
How's it going to add value to the continent? Mm. How will I, with my experience, benefit what the continent really needs and address the issues that it has?
Well, that then leads into what African global excellence is about. You know, it's not just about us being on the continent and being proud and knowing where we come from. It's about putting that shining beacon to the rest of the world and gathering what we can from the rest of the world, but also uplifting our continent. Where do you think we're sitting in terms of actually achieving, from an East African perspective, and then let's look from a South African perspective, of where we're achieving that level of African global excellence?
So I think for many years we've not appreciated enough our level of excellence that we bring to the world in many fields. Look at sports, for example. Look at athletics. We are now at the point where many long distance runners in the world who want to compete have to come and train in Africa because we've proven that we can produce really top athletes in South Africa, for example.
Part of our conditions and everything else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Look at the music space today and look at what Nigerian artists or the likes of Diamond Platinums are doing. They are producing quality music and are producing music with artists who are globally known.
Yeah.
Things that, you know, when I was growing up, the Commodores would never have played with Fela Kuti, for example.
I hear you. At all.
Exactly. Exactly. But now, you know, you're seeing what Dibanj and what Davido are doing and those kind of things. So I think we're really showcasing to the world that, you know, we can compete, we can produce, and we can sit, we deserve a seat on the high table in more ways than one.
And also, I think what is very, very exciting is that we can do it on our own terms now.
Exactly.
You know, and I mean, you mentioned the West African, and I mean, my introduction to Nigerian hip hop was through Dibanj, it was through Ikechukwu, it was through Nato C. And what I loved is in terms of what they were doing, they were not apologetic for what they were putting out.
Yes.
And incredibly proud of what they're doing. So their government's pumping money in and so forth.
Yeah. Singing Pidgin.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, don't lose your identity in the process.
Yeah.
Singing Pidgin, let the American sing in his New York accent, but you produce beautiful music in the process.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we need to be very conscious about as Africans, that in as much as we spread ourselves and grow and experience different spaces, don't lose who you are. You know, we've just come off an all-staff conference, a kickoff session for the academy, and we were all told to come up with proverbs. And the group I was working with came up with a proverb that says that it doesn't matter how long a tree grows, it doesn't forget its roots.
Yes. Very, very, very true.
Yeah.
So African Leadership Academy. So what year did you come to SA?
So I came to SA in 2004.
Okay.
And I joined the academy in 2012.
Yeah. Well, that after you got your MBA.
Yes. So I did an MBA at Gibbs. I'd always wanted to do an MBA, but I thought, you know, an MBA is as good as a school you do it in.
Yeah.
And so I while I worked in Europe, whatever, I figured out, let me find the right school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was patient. And when I moved to South Africa, Gibbs was a perfect place for me to go to my MBA.
Yeah. No, it's a great institution.
Yeah.
So your first entry into ALA, how did you come about? How did you find that synergy?
So very interesting. I was out with my kids in Cedar Square, actually.
Yeah.
Sunday afternoon, stroll with my kids. And a friend of mine was a board member at ALA.
Okay.
And he tells me, like, maybe actually ALA is looking for someone with the experience. Because at that point in time, after I came back from Europe, I stayed with Eli Lilly and I ran Sub-Saharan Africa. So I ran 25 countries in Sub-Saharan Africa, English and Portuguese speaking. So everything from Nigeria, Ghana to Southern Africa.
Wow.
And so I had gathered really good 6 or so years of really good Pan-African experience.
Mm.
And it was in line with what I wanted my personal mission to be. So he tells me, actually, they're looking. And at that point in time, I was thinking, okay, I need to look for something else.
Yeah.
So I'd left Lilia to join another organization. And then so this board member tells me, actually, they're looking for someone of your experience. So we kind of, I wasn't really keen. I wasn't really sure. A school, because that was what the perception I had of the school, of it as a school then.
It's an institution.
Exactly. Yeah. I'd never been in education before.
Mm.
But I thought, interesting, you know. I'd always committed to saying that that everything I do going forward will be Pan-African. So,
right.
You know, so I sent in my resume. He sent the founder. The founders told me, come. It took a bit of a while because I was thinking, like, whatever, man.
Mm.
And then I went. It's the worst mistake I made. Really. Because I walked in there and I met the kids.
Mm.
And you know how you walk into a house when you're looking for a house?
Mm.
And you can see yourself living in the house.
Yeah.
I saw myself working with the kids. Mm. I said, this is the thing I want to do to transform Africa.
Yeah.
Because those kids so warmed my heart. They so inspired me about their dreams and vision.
Mm.
And I said, you know, we as adults need to be asking ourselves, what can we give to the future generation that we wish we had?
Precisely, yeah.
And that's what I saw myself doing.
Mm.
And my mind was made up. Straight up, you know, I said, okay, if I can get in here, this is exactly what I want to do.
Yeah.
So I went back to William Asiko, who was a board member then. I said, dude,
that's my space.
Exactly. I told William, I think this is a really cool thing.
Yeah.
And you know, Rosie, I have worked at ALA for 5 years now, African Leadership Academy, and in my previous role, while I worked for Lilly, which is a phenomenal company, I had great experiences. I changed people's lives with the medicine we produced. I touched people. I met ministers. I was invited to lavish parties or lavish functions.
Yeah.
But the last 5 years at the academy, by far, the best years of my life.
Wow.
No question about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What makes, I mean, we're going to get into the dynamics of what ALA is about, but that feeling of walking onto the premises and you don't think it's a school, and I don't know if there's this if our ancestors are conjuring up these energies, because on the three different occasions I've walked onto the campus, and it doesn't feel like a campus, it's like going to a retreat.
Yeah.
There's something magical about it.
Yeah.
And have we over the last centuries been missing this, that we're supposed to be bringing these different nations together? I mean, what is it about the energy that lives on the campus?
So first of all, I think one of the big things that the campus offers, and what ALA as an institution, it's not a school, actually, it's an institution, is really about the future of a positive pathway and trajectory for the continent.
Yeah.
When you walk on the campus, you just feel the vibe of where Africa is going.
Yeah.
You just feel, you feel these kids who are believing that, you know, if they're good enough, they're old enough.
Yeah.
You feel these kids who are starting to see the continent as their home, not the countries that they come from.
Yeah.
You feel this vibe of kids who are going beyond the biases that their parents carry of religion and boundaries and borders and stuff like that. You feel these kids who embrace the diversity of their accents and their religions.
Yeah, but also what's also beautiful is that they're embracing the diversity of who they want to become.
Exactly.
So, you know, you spoke about you needed to be a doctor, and we come from the area it was like either be a doctor, social worker, teacher. You know,
absolutely, yes.
And what's so beautiful is that entrepreneurship is the way of the future, and the rest of the world are seeing it and so forth.
Yeah.
But in terms of the African context, it was never really accepted. Although when you live in, and especially, and I'll talk from Uganda because I've lived there, but from the experience that people will have two or three different companies or jobs just to get by. But I mean, that is an entrepreneurial spirit.
Yes.
What is powerful about ALA for me is that it's teaching that, but in a level of excellence.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah. So I think it's from a couple of points of view. One, so let's get the African context in place. Okay, we're the youngest continent by far. 70% of us are under 30 years of age.
Yeah.
Our average age is 19.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you compare to the US, which is I think is at about 41, Europe is about 43, Japan is at 51, for example. That Western world has a very different problem.
Yeah.
Their problem is, where are we going to get workers to take up the jobs that we have?
Yeah.
In Africa, is that where are we going to get jobs for our people?
Yeah.
Okay. So youth unemployment is arguably Africa's biggest risk.
Mm.
We have a generation of young people who are growing up who are more educated than their parents, but have few economic opportunities.
Yeah.
But if we harness that youth bulge, we have a really great opportunity to drive this continent forward.
Yeah.
So how is our education fit for purpose with that context in mind? How is our education fit for purpose, recognizing that things like what we perceived before as problems in Africa are actually opportunities?
Yeah.
Okay. When there's no electricity, it's an opportunity for someone to start a solar lamp business.
Mm.
So, and we always, like we tell our kids, every time someone complains, there's an opportunity.
Yeah.
Okay. So the academy is really trying has recognized that we need kids who are going to be going into the workspace, thinking about being job creators, not necessarily job seekers like their parents.
Yeah.
And for that to happen, you need to start exposing kids to entrepreneurship very early. And so what's really unique about the academy is our entrepreneurial leadership curriculum, where kids are exposed to entrepreneurial thinking and entrepreneurship and leadership at a very young age, when they come in at 16.
Mm-hmm.
And we give them opportunities not just to do the theoretical part of it, but every kid has to run a business on campus.
Wow.
Okay,
yeah.
So you start learning about
it's also that practical side of actually just seeing and experiencing the challenges, not only the joys of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And also recognizing that you can, when you start thinking of building businesses, don't just think about building business in your country. So the teams in which they work in, they work with kids from other countries.
Mm.
So you get exposure to working with a Nigerian, with an Ethiopian, you know, that kind of stuff. And in the process, we believe that kids learn best by doing.
Mm.
In the process, you actually realize, you know, starting a business is not as frightening as I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Because Rosie, you'll admit that many of us would have loved such businesses, but the fear.
The fear that everyone puts into you. It's like, no!
Exactly. You know? And the comfort that a salary gives you that prevents you from taking that leap.
But it also goes back to, and I'm not bashing what our parents told us, but it also goes, what I love about it is that it gives you the opportunity that if you have a dream, And if you apply the right principles to it,
yeah.
you can achieve that dream.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely.
It's
yeah.
not, it's just not a made up thing. It's actually very, very tangible.
Absolutely.
The kids, where are they from across Africa? Is it just only, outside of South Africa?
So in our name, the African Leadership Academy, our mission is to transform Africa by creating the next generation of ethical African leaders and top talent. And so, to date, with the incoming class that comes in actually this Saturday, the 2nd, this weekend, we'll have about 1,000 kids from 50 African countries.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yes.
Okay. And that is really exciting.
Yeah.
So we still have that stretch to want to get to cover the whole the continent. Mm. But we've come such a long, in 10 years, we've covered 97% of the continent.
That is powerful.
Continent.
And then how do you get around? Because obviously you've got the English speaking countries, you've got the Francophone and also the Portuguese. What is the right terminology for Portuguese?
Lusophone.
Lusophone. Yes. I learned that while I was on campus. Okay. Just so my listeners know. how do you get around that aspect of the different languages? Because the curriculum is taught in English.
It is taught in English. Mm. So just for context, 30% of our kids are Francophone.
Okay.
About 15% are Lusophone, and then the rest are Anglophone.
Okay.
So yeah, we recognize that some kids come on campus not speaking a word of English.
Mm-hmm.
So we've tried a couple of different things. So what we've done now, like this year, we brought the non-English speaking kids in earlier.
Okay.
So they're on campus as we speak, and they've been for the last couple of weeks,
okay.
going through an accelerated English for Excellence program.
Wow.
Okay. So we recognize that is what's happening. But actually, you'll be amazed at how, you know, because of the homogeneity of young Africans, they listen to the same music.
Yeah.
So they listen to English music. So you can imagine if you can sing a song in Kiswahili or in English, even if you don't understand it, when you start learning the language, it's a lot easier.
Yeah.
So you'd be amazed at the proficiency in English for a lot of these kids. It's
fairly
decent. So, but we still bring them in earlier to get them up to speed.
Okay, brilliant. Yeah. And then let's talk about the program. So you got your 2-year diploma program.
Yes.
What does that entail? And who qualifies for this?
Okay, so that is our core flagship program. Mm-hmm. And that program, we get kids aged 16 to 19 from across Africa.
Yeah.
We don't worry about grades at this point in time. We're looking for kids who academically are smart enough.
Mm.
They don't have to be A students, but they have to be smart enough.
Yeah.
But what we are really uncompromising about is we look for kids with strong leadership potential.
Okay.
So they should have demonstrated things like courage, perseverance, strong values, and entrepreneurial spirit, and a commitment to their communities or to the continent. So, and their communities could be their church. These are kids who are committed to making sure that they say the church is strong, or the religious group is strong, or their neighborhood is good, or a club they're leading in school is flourishing. So that commitment to a cause or to a group of people and the willingness to give back and lead is a critical part of what we look
That's
for.
That's incredibly powerful because, I mean, looking at the history of South Africa, a lot of children that are going into the tertiary sector don't get in because of the school background.
Yeah.
So they don't necessarily mean that they're not clever or they're not getting the grades. Yeah. It could just be the circumstances of the school.
Totally correct, Rosie. I mean, you can imagine if a kid grows up, let's take a township of Alex Osowero, and he grows up in potentially some schools where they didn't have enough teachers.
He was just one of those kids that got lost.
Exactly.
You know, a class of 54.
Yeah.
I mean, an example, I used to work with an NGO where we placed children from underprivileged backgrounds into tertiary education, into tertiary systems. And we discovered that we needed to take some of the kids out and do exactly the same thing as you're doing. It's almost like a gap.
Yes.
A bridging class.
Yes.
And there was one girl that when she arrived at the organization, she was barely scraping through. We put her through our program, and then she graduated cum laude with a law degree. You know, and that was just because she was one of those in the class of 54, 72, whatever it was, that was left at the back and nobody paid attention to her.
And finding the spark in her that will light the fire.
Yeah, I like that.
Yes, that is a critical part of what the whole process is.
Yeah.
So, and that's what we, and also, we've got to find the gems.
Mm.
We believe that talent is universal, opportunity is not.
Mm.
With, if you look at the poverty in Africa and the socioeconomic gaps that we have on the continent, it's almost as if, like they say in the US, your zip code determines the quality of education you get.
Yeah.
In Africa, your where you live or the city you live in or the country you live in could determine the same. But we try and overcome those issues that the continent is facing. So we work with about 3,000 partners to help identify those kids.
Okay.
So we work with people. We have two or three refugee camps in Africa that send us kids.
Wow.
Okay. And the NGOs in those communities will tell us, actually, there's a kid in this community that we're working with who you guys should invest in. And actually, one of our most admirable alumni is from a refugee camp, has come to us, gone to the US, has built a school in his refugee camp where he's now caters for 600 kids.
Wow.
And he's back in his refugee camp, continuing the work of making lives better for kids in his community.
See, that's what it's about. That's the power behind that.
Exactly.
I love that. Love that.
Yes.
So, I mean, I'm glad you're also mentioning the fact that because a lot of people, when ALA started, thought it was this elitist school.
Yes.
That, well, if my parents aren't making this amount of money, if I don't get the scholarship, I can't get it.
Yeah.
You know, how true is that?
The experience is elitist.
Yeah.
And it has to be because we're investing in Africa's biggest challenge of leadership. So we need to make sure that our experience is producing those kind of people.
Mm.
The cost is not elitist, okay? And we are equal opportunity schools. So when the process, basically how it works at ALA, is you go through the application process, and then from 4,000 or so kids, we select 130.
Mm-hmm.
And at the point of selecting the kids, we do not care whether they can afford to pay fees or not. We've not checked with their parents.
Those credentials. Wow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We want to be unbiased in making sure that we bring in the best kids that Africa has to offer for us to invest in for the future leadership of this continent. So only after we admit you, do we do a background check on your family's capability, on your parents, whatever, and we decide your fees. Now, let me make this very, very clear. No two kids at ALA pay the same fees unless you're paying the full amount of fees.
Wow.
Okay, if you're, for argument's sake, Dangote's child or Patrice Motsepe's child, you will pay the full fees, which you'll find on our website.
Right.
Okay, but that only 2 to 5 kids a year pay that fees.
Mm.
Everyone else pays a sliding scale.
So it's basically you're coming in on a clean slate and you're just feeding this excellence that's going to be handed to you.
Yeah, exactly. So if we find the right talent, we'll not let it go.
Yeah.
We'll invest in it and we'll find someone to pay for it. And that's why we have a lot of support from corporate Africa American donors help us a lot in finding money to close the gap.
Who are your partners?
So we've got in Africa, we've got a couple of really big partners who have been with us for a long time. People like Pembani, people like Nedbank, GE, have been there for a long time. People like Pernod Ricard.
Okay.
So there are a couple of very, long-standing partners. Coca-Cola Foundation have been big with us for a long time. MasterCard Foundation are big supporters of ours. And there are a couple of individuals in Africa. But sadly, Rosie, I must admit that we still fundraise 80% of our money from the US. We struggle to fundraise from Africa, which is really, really sad. Especially when you consider that we're an African solution to an African problem.
Why do you think that is, though?
You know, it puzzles me in many ways. Once again, I think partially is as Africans, we sometimes don't take as much pride in building our institutions and supporting our institutions.
Mm. And do you think it's also because, you know, when and talking from the South African context is that we always seem to look to the West for a better solution.
Exactly.
And is it, well, you know, I went to Harvard or I went to this institution as opposed to, well, I went to UCT and I'm proud or I'm a product of ALA. Is it because we're still indoctrinated with that?
Absolutely correct. So would rather buy a necklace from some American or a handbag from Gucci than buy one designed by a girl down the street.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So there's still, I think, a bit of hang up that we have as Africans.
Mm. And in order to make it, you need to leave the continent and then come back.
Exactly.
You know, like if you think of all, if you look at the designers, especially the designers from Kenya.
Yeah.
I mean, people who have been visiting Kenya, you love the designs. But the thing is, the minute that they reach Fashion Week or they reach New York Fashion Week or whatever, suddenly it's like, okay, no, they're worthy enough to wear them with my Gucci pumps and things like that. You
exactly.
know?
I mean, if you look at the media coverage that ALA has had over time, we get more coverage from foreign media than we get from African media, for example, which is a bit shocking.
It's embarrassing.
Exactly. So there is an attitude thing about we as Africans. I mean, that we need to sort out. And when it comes to Africa specifically, would love to rally a bit more support from South Africa. Because if you look at just number of dollar millionaires, No country has more dollar millionaires than South Africa.
Sure.
Yet if you come to campus, we have more places named after Nigerians than you have after South Africans.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow, that's scary.
Okay, so I think there's a really good opportunity there for us to mobilize more African giving, and we're turning 10 years old next year, and I think our decennial year is a perfect opportunity for us to mobilize more Africans to come into our fold.
Yeah. And so I want to talk about the celebrations, but let's just stick to so you've got your 2-year diploma program.
Yes. Yes.
So they can come in the 2 year. Then what happens after that?
So they come in for the 2 years. And the 2 years they do, it's a 2-year pre-university program.
Right.
And in the 2 years they do the Cambridge A-level curriculum and do 2 years a very unique curriculum called entrepreneurial leadership. Because if you think about it, Rosie, we're actually preparing kids for jobs that don't exist.
Yeah.
To solve problems that we haven't fully conceptualized. To collaborate and work with people that they don't know.
And who formulated the entrepreneurial curriculum?
So it's something that our faculty put together and continue to improve and iterate over time.
Yeah.
So that entrepreneurial leadership curriculum is designed to prepare kids for that uncertain world.
Yeah.
So it gives and inculcates in them skills like critical thinking, problem solving, collaboration skills, emotional intelligence.
Emotional intelligence, incredibly powerful.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't do emotional intelligence, Rosie, until I was 32.
Yeah.
These kids are doing emotional intelligence at 16.
Wow.
So they're some of the most self-aware kids you've ever met. Mm.
And also you've got a mixture between different nations and different traditions. So that's even added. I mean, that's one of the problems that we've had in South Africa is that people, we're not tolerating each other's traditions and where we're coming from and ways and so forth.
And that's why education today should not just address the academic needs of a kid, should address the social issues and challenges Africa is facing. So part of what we need to be asking ourselves, how are we enhancing the Pan-African narrative? And that's what ALA does. So, for example, you never share a room with someone from your country at the academy.
Yeah.
So you can learn about other Africans. And as we look at South Africa specifically, how is our education addressing things like violence against women?
Mm.
Are we having in schools spaces for kids to be taught about the values of respecting women and especially boys? It pains me, like when I saw this viral video about this young boy beating up a girl.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, we should need to be addressing at the school level. So the 2-year program is really addressed to be fit for purpose for what Africa's needs are.
Mm.
And that's why we teach kids entrepreneurship. That's why every kid on campus has to run a business on campus.
Yeah.
Because we know we need to create more job creators, not job seekers. Mm. We need to build on the power of young people. So the 2-year program runs along those sides. And then upon graduation, we send the kids to university.
Mm-hmm.
Now, about 80% of them who go to university in the US.
Okay.
Okay. And we're very grateful for American colleges because they enable our kids to go. Remember, majority of our kids are from very poor backgrounds.
Yeah, yeah.
So 70% of our kids come from very, very poor backgrounds.
Yeah.
So they'll not be able to go to a college in Randburg, for example, left to their own devices.
Mm.
So basically what happens is American kids, colleges tend to generally give us financial aid, scholarships.
Right. Yeah.
So to date, we in the last 10 years, our kids have attracted about almost $100 million worth of college scholarship. So when you start thinking about the success we're starting to create, one, we're getting kids who are very talented and from very remote backgrounds, but who if we invested in would be good for Africa.
Mm.
Two, we're bringing together kids from a Pan-African platform. Three, we are finding these kids opportunities to grow.
Mm.
We have 320 kids studying in the US. Okay.
Wow.
Every summer, we bring the kids, or South African winter, we bring the kids back to Africa for internships.
Mm-hmm.
So we place about 300 interns across the continent every year, giving these kids work experience. And eventually they graduate and about 80% of them come back to Africa within 2 months of graduation.
Yeah.
So we are about a lifelong program that will be transformative to the continent. And so even comes back to the question about fees. We need to look at the lifelong engagement and value we give these kids as young people. So you get a kid from Soweto who's from a single household, mother's household, who would otherwise probably not have finished school because the parents could not afford fees. We bring them to ALA, get them a scholarship, go to the US, give them a phenomenal 4-year internship experience, find them a job when they graduate, and plug them into a network, a Pan-African network for life.
Well, that was going to be my next point, is that with the network that you already have created,
yeah.
is... I mean, it's astronomical because of also your partners and your funders and so forth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just within the alumni alone, we have about, with the whole, as I said, mentioned earlier, the whole network, including the incoming students, about 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
And that's growing every year.
Yeah.
But we believe a young person's journey of growth is not just 2 years.
Yeah.
And we probably, not many schools you'd guess or you know would tell you, the kids who graduated 4 years ago, what are they doing today?
Mm.
We know where each of 1,000 kids are.
So there's a track record.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you wanted to go start a non-profit or wanted to do something, you come back to the network and ask, guys, I need help with this.
Yeah.
And we'll support your dreams. So our vision is to create this network of 6,000 young leaders in Africa who together will work to for Africa's transformation.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Build in a Box program.
Yes.
I love that. Because we always talk to, you know, keep your thoughts in the box. And this is like just taking it to another level.
Yes. Yeah. So in our entrepreneurial leadership curriculum, we have 6 pillars. There's one called Self. We teach kids about themselves, others. The third pillar is called Africa. Mm-hmm. So we have an African studies module. The fourth pillar is called Build.
Mm-hmm.
And Build is a process by which we try and create entrepreneurial thinkers. So we believe we can create entrepreneurial thinkers of any child.
Okay.
Okay. Now, let me be very clear about that. Not just about entrepreneurs, but entrepreneurial thinkers.
Mm.
Because Africa needs entrepreneurial thinkers in the private space, in the non-profit space, and in government.
Mm.
Our problems need innovative solutions. And for that, we need people who think differently about the problem. So our Build process, Build module, is a core part of what we do around our entrepreneurial leadership curriculum. So, as I mentioned earlier in our conversation, Africa's biggest risk is youth unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
So we figured out how do our kids try and, or how do we as a community in the meantime try and address that issue?
Right.
How do we stimulate entrepreneurship in the continent? So we've packaged our Build model into a camp. So mm-hmm. it's a 2 to 3 day camp, literally packing the material in a box that has lesson plans and everything.
Yeah.
And when our kids go on holiday, they take a box with them.
Yeah.
And they go and run these youth entrepreneurship camps
in
their schools, in their communities, all over, as a way of stimulating entrepreneurial mm-hmm. thinking amongst our young people.
Yeah.
And we run about anything between 30 to 50 of these across. So you can imagine, we run them in refugee camps. We run them in Nairobi, in Lagos, in Joburg. Anywhere where we can get 2 or so ALA kids, we'll run a camp.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And the whole idea is to stimulate entrepreneurial thinking amongst our young people. So, and these have proven to be really popular and very successful. So I remember the guys from Kenya ran one of their first camps about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They worked on three ideas.
Yeah.
One of them, they worked on 4 ideas. 3 got commercialized.
Mm-hmm.
One just won an award for an e-recycling business.
Oh, wow.
That came out of that camp.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of things we're trying to stimulate.
Yeah. And also just trying to, I suppose, not stimulate, but find out, because what our thinking on changing the environment, on changing the socioeconomic problems, are very, very different to the person living on the ground in Nairobi, to the person living in a camp in Rwanda.
Yes.
You know, so it's igniting those different necessities within different communities, which is incredibly powerful.
Exactly. And you can imagine, as a 16, 17-year-old kid, you're unconsciously incompetent.
Yeah.
You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
But if put through this program, you suddenly realize, wow, hang on a second. We've been complaining about this problem in my community for the longest. And actually, I just realized I've got the power to do something about it. But also, this is an area of passion for myself. So you combine passion and ability within their local space, you're lighting a fire.
Yeah, igniting a fire.
Igniting a fire. And that's exactly what you want to do.
Power.
Yes.
Okay, your birthday celebration. So that's all true birthdays. It's going to carry on for the whole year, not just one day.
Rosie, you know we're African. That's how we roll.
You know what I'm saying?
That's how we roll.
Lots of food.
Exactly. So we turned 10 years old. And,
congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. So, I mean, it's unbelievable that this thing that was sitting in the heads of 4 founders more than 10 years ago has come this far and has gotten to where we are today. And so our celebration, as I said, in typical African style, starts September.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we kick them off now. We've got our kickoff event on campus on September 15th,
mm-hmm.
and it goes to the end of 2018.
Beautiful.
And the whole idea behind this decennial celebration is around 3 themes.
Mm.
1, we're going to reflect.
Mm.
What have the last 10 years been like for us? What have we learned?
Yeah.
What have we failed on? What have we succeeded on? What are the hits and misses? Okay, and that will be doing a lot of reflection with our community of supporters and stuff like that, our alumni, host families, corporate partners, everyone. And then the second pillar is about celebrate.
Mm.
What are we really proud of?
Yeah.
Where have we exceeded expectations? Mm. Where have we outperformed our peers, for example? And the third pillar would be about looking ahead, the invest pillar.
Yeah.
And so how? What are our goals for the next 10 years? What will it take for us to get there? And how do we start the investment process to enable us to get there
and pushing towards
yes that. So those are kind of the three pillars that we're looking at. We have a flagship event in Joburg on February 23rd, 24th,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll have a sprinkling of many other events
of different things
yes.
going on. But also, what are the other things that I think my listeners would also appreciate is that you also have different guest lecturers or speakers coming in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So first of all, we need to get you on campus.
Don't worry, I'm already there before, even if the invite wasn't coming, I'm coming.
We need to get you on campus.
Yeah.
We so as part of our African Studies module, we really try and bring a lot of inspiring speakers on campus. So you know, we try and look for people who are also come from multiple sectors.
Mm.
So we don't bias for politics, we don't bias for whatever. We bring all sorts of people. So we've had, all sorts of people come to speak on campus, from presidents to young musicians, to CEOs of organizations, you name it. It's been really a wide spectrum. And so we're forever looking for inspiring people, and especially young speakers.
Yeah.
People who have a journey worth telling, who have lessons of failure and success worth telling, people who
I think that's incredibly important, because
in
we're living in this age of this instant gratification.
Yes,
that if you're not at 25 driving a BMW and wearing this and this, you haven't made it.
Yes,
yet you have somebody who's in their 30s who is still struggling, but at least the life lessons that came along with that nobody's talking about, because it's just supposed to be happening, you know.
So long as we're failing forward, it's good.
Yeah.
Because in that process, you're learning lessons.
I'm going to remember that the next time I hit an obstacle.
Exactly. So long as you're failing forward, you're on the right path.
Yeah.
You know, as
I
say, there are no failures. There are just lessons to be learned in
life.
Okay. So you either succeed or you learn a lesson.
Mm.
And that's what we need to be doing. So we're forever looking for inspiring guest speakers. So if your listeners and your listeners think that they have something they can offer, we will be happy to hear from them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do we contact you? You're on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter, F Aswani, just as I spell it, Aswani.
Mm-hmm.
Find me on LinkedIn, Frank Aswani. Go to our website, www.africanleadershipacademy.org.
Mm. And also, just another thing to our listeners is that you can, you know, some communities don't have access to it or don't know about ALA. But if you do know of a community or do know of an individual, you can nominate them.
So actually, our application window for the next intake, the 2018 intake, is currently open.
Okay.
Okay. So it's going to be open till January the 12th.
Mm-hmm.
And let me categorically say this, is that we don't get enough South African kids applying.
Aha. Uh-huh. You know, but I'm also guilty of that, because for a long time, I thought it was for non-South Africans. And I think a lot of people do feel that
Rose, it's an African institution.
But you know, that's what we use the word guilty, is because South Africans, we still have this elitist thing that, yes, we're South African, but we're not African.
Yeah,
and no, that, you know, that sentiment is still shining through.
So let me tell you this, and this I say this from the bottom of my heart. If I was 16 to 19, a 16, 19-year-old African today, there is nowhere else I'd want to go to school.
Yeah. Now, I agree with you wholeheartedly.
There's no else, because I'm going to come to this school, I'll get a phenomenal experience, I'll be taught about entrepreneurship and leadership, and I'll be plugged into a network for life.
Yeah.
This school will support me in my dreams in my 30s, 40s, 50s.
Yeah.
Not many institutions would claim that of any of the kids that they take and are committed to.
Mm.
So the application process is currently open. Would love to have people apply. And we're looking for leaders, not just in the traditional sense of a prefect.
Mm.
If you find that kid in your church who's leading a youth group and who you think has a really good level head and has demonstrated what I've said, spoken about, like courage.
Or innovative.
It could be a kid in your community. It could be your niece, your nephew. That kid who does well in school, but is an interest, is thinking about businesses to run, or is setting up an NGO to sort out something. That's the kind of challenge to be setting to us.
Yeah.
And we need to work together to invest in trying to find this talent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good luck to that. Moving on a personal front. So where is Dr. Zwani going to be the next couple of years?
Oh, good question.
Obviously on the continent.
Yeah, no, yeah. There's no question about it. I think, you know, as I said, you know what they say in life. Your first 40 years are about creating your legitimacy.
Mm.
Your next 40 are about creating your legacy.
Yeah.
I'm on that next 40.
Okay. Yeah.
On my next 40.
Yeah.
And I think I am very lucky that being at the academy, I have a sweet spot between doing something I enjoy, working with people I enjoy, and in a continent that I enjoy.
Yeah. Okay. But you see, something that you mentioned early in the beginning of the interview, which is very, very important, is that you need to work hard for what you want, but you also need to enjoy.
Yes.
You need to reap the benefits and have fun and go kick a ball or sleep in or do whatever you do that makes you happy.
Yeah.
Because you need that yin and yang. And where a lot of us struggle, especially in the leadership, is like, no, well, I've got to put in the 15 hours a day and God forbid I should take off a day or God forbid I should sleep or do something indulging, you know, and you need that in order to feed both in.
Exactly.
Know?
So like right now, I'm working and enjoying myself.
Yeah.
I mean, I
love what you're doing. You exactly. Never look at the day
exactly,
you love. I'm behind the mic, baby. You know.
So I'm really, really, and all of us at the academy keep saying this. We're really privileged to have the opportunity to work there, and many of us will be doing many other things. But our commitment is to invest in these young people, invest in the continent, and make it better. So that is something for sure. I see myself continue to do. Next couple of years, I continue to hope to be a best dad to my kids and best family man to my family. I think that's a critical part of what I need to do. But
you know, talking about that and going on the tweet that you retweeted and you tagged me in about the percentage of kids under the age not living with their biological fathers.
Yeah.
And from your point of view, what is the way forward in changing that? I mean, we can't undo our histories, but how do we move forward in terms of creating that environment for our children?
Yeah, 60% of kids in South Africa under the age of 10 don't live with their biological fathers.
Yeah.
That is frightening.
Yeah.
That is really frightening on many fronts.
Mm.
But this is what I say, education needs to be fit for purpose.
Yeah.
So when you look at all the social issues that we are facing as communities, as countries, what are the unique differences in our country-specific education that address some of these issues? How are we educating young girls about getting involved early sexually? How are we educating boys about the role of early fatherhood and what fatherhood actually means?
Yeah,
and the responsibilities that come with it.
Yeah.
So as we're going through the self criticism and self analysis of our education system. Is the education system addressing this?
Mm.
Or is a village that is supposed to raise this child addressing these issues? And if it's not, we need to be doing something. And that's why, if we can't do them in the education system, how else can we address some of these things? People are blogging, people are writing, people are running NGOs, people are doing those kind of things. But we've got to prevent this kind of thing. Because I can imagine, many of these girls who have got absent dads or absent fathers to their children are young. They, as I said, they're unconsciously incompetent. They don't know what parenting is about.
Mm.
And they're raising a child who will probably fall into the same trap down the road.
Yeah.
So I think it's a holistic approach. The government needs to play a role in this. We as individuals need to play a role in this. But anyone that we can inform and influence to have a better life for both themselves make the right decision so that they're getting kids at the right time is something.
And it's dialogue, it's communication. We haven't been communicating, especially in this tech age where if you're not on your iPad, you're on your phone, or you know, somebody can be sitting across from you and you send them a message as opposed to speaking to them.
Yes.
You know, and it reinforces that we need to have these conversations, but also men need to have dialogue between themselves and we need to start holding each other accountable.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that, I mean, I'm not a mother, but that for me would be, and that's one of the reasons why I've held on for so long before, because I was like, well, am I going to be having the right dialogue?
Exactly.
You know, which moves to my next factor, which will be about, is that what were your fears as a father?
So actually, I never wanted kids.
Mm. Yeah, it's always us.
No, the reason why I didn't want children is because my father died when I was quite young.
Yeah.
And so I was left with four brothers to take care of.
Mm.
And people will call it, people, well, that's what people call black tax.
Yeah.
I refuse to call it. I think it's offensive to call it black tax. I think we have a responsibility to take care of our people. And I look at my brothers now, they all have, I took them from primary school and high school. They all have degrees. They're standing on their own feet. And two things. One, I'm proud that I gave them a chance in life because I prevented another four kids from going on the streets.
Yeah.
If I just left them alone. And two, they will give back as much as someone else.
Yeah, when the because time, they had that grounding automatically.
Exactly, when the time comes. So I was very, I didn't want to be a kid. So by the father, I mean, so by the time I was done with raising my brothers, I was thinking, I'm done. You know, I've done my parenting. I've attended disciplinary hearings in school. I've been in those you know, shops buying school uniform and you know, all those sorts of things. I thought, I'm done. Okay, so when my friends were doing the things that they were doing at young ages, as I said, park their cars and spontaneously go to the coast or invest, I didn't have that opportunity to do that at that point in time. But there's a really good feeling that I look at my brothers now and I look at how they're surviving and how they're thriving in their own careers, in their own ways. And I'm proud of my contribution to that journey.
Yeah.
I don't want payback because I did what I had to do.
No, well, the payback is the success.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I think people need to understand that is that if you're going to be doing it for the good.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't necessarily have to come back as dollars in your account.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, who was it? I think it was Strive that said at that forum was that you can have what 150 Ferraris, but there's no better compliment than somebody saying you gave me a degree.
Exactly, you know? Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in hindsight, if I didn't have my kids, would have been the worst mistake I'd have made.
Yeah.
In hindsight, knowing what I know now, I mean, my kids are just my life. They're like the greatest two little beings. When I've had a really rotten day and I just want to have an unbiased world. Where they're just flowing with love, I go to my children. And I mean, you know, but I've also become very philosophical about life. I don't think parenting is for everyone.
100%.
Okay, not everyone. Society expects us to go to primary school, high school, university, and then get
the
married.
Kids, get the 2.0, exactly. Live in this house, have this car.
But I have come to the conclusion that that's not everyone's path.
Yeah.
You need to find a path that works for you.
Yeah.
And don't feel bad about it. Okay, because that is you. That's the diversity that you bring to the world.
Yeah. And music?
Oh.
Look at these eyes light
up.
Oh,
man.
When you mentioned African music, his eyes just light up.
So that's another passion of mine. I'm a big music collector. I have something like maybe 3,000 or 4,000 CDs.
What?
Yeah. I have about 600 vinyls.
Oh, wow.
And music is really my other passion. Yeah. When I'm in the gym, when I'm anywhere in my house, we wake up and we switch on music somewhere. There's music playing in the house, you know. So that's really the other passion I've got. One of my biggest regrets, actually, is that I can't play the sax. Yeah. I can't play any music.
It's never too late. It's never too late. African global excellence.
but that's really a passion of mine. I mean, yesterday, my first groupie moment at ALA. Because you know who visited us?
Yes, I saw the picture.
Kirk Whalum. Oh. My shoes were polished. My hands were oiled.
You were shining. You were feeling it.
I had shaped my hair the night before.
But isn't that great? I mean, the power of music, that also just transcends through any tradition, any nation. I mean, it's powerful.
So when I travel, I try and buy two things every time I travel. I try and buy a CD or a musician from that country or music, and I try and buy a fridge magnet for my kids.
Okay.
So they can know where daddy was.
Yeah.
And they can learn in the process. But I think music is one of those things that traverses culture, traverses language.
Yeah.
We don't need to understand each other if we can feel the beat.
Yeah.
If we can enjoy similar melodies and stuff. And so that's really something. So I collect music religiously.
Yeah.
And anyone out there who's willing to have a music session so we can swap some music or just chat about music, happy to have a chat.
Has Brahu come to ALA?
Oh, yeah, many times.
Yeah.
Many times. He was a graduation guest speaker a couple of years
back.
And he's a big fan of ours.
Yeah.
You know, we're hoping that as part of the 10th decennial year, we'll have him play one of our events somewhere along the way.
Definitely.
No, he's we're building a really good network of people, and that's another thing about being at ALA and being part of our network is that you meet some really interesting people.
Yeah.
You meet Rosie Montaigne, for example. You know, we it's you'll be amazed at the kind of network you meet.
Yeah. And just also the energies that are ignited, all the thoughts and what you need to do. It's a beautiful space.
Absolutely.
Beautiful space.
And you'll expand your network beyond your country network. You'll meet people from other things. So as we start talking about our events coming up, where you can sign up and where it's open for free sign up, please sign up. September 15th is the first one on campus.
Okay.
1:30 to 4:30. Mm-hmm. Come and watch us as we welcome our 10th class.
Beautiful. And of course, I mean, if you missed in all of the other contact details from before, it's all on my Facebook page, so my Twitter page. I even wrote a blog about it. Somebody asked me, are you like being sponsored by LA? I was like, no, they get the Pan African. They get the vision.
No, trust me, Rosie sponsors us, trust me.
It has been an absolute pleasure.
It's an absolute pleasure.
I definitely want to get you in maybe end of the year or next year just to see, you know, what transitions have happened and also the celebrations. I mean, anything really exciting, let us know.
Yeah. So actually, Rosie, don't get me in. Get one of my kids in.
Yeah, that's actually a very good idea.
Okay?
Yeah.
So I tell half the story.
Yeah.
Let them come here and walk you through their journey.
Maybe one of the students now and one somebody from alumni.
Exactly.
Brilliant idea.
Yes. So because I see myself as a catalyst in this Africa's transformation.
Yeah.
The real carriers will be our kids.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And part of it is another thing we have to change. You know, in Africa, generally, kids are to be seen, not heard.
Yeah.
We need to give our kids opportunities to be heard.
Yes. Thank you. That's why I'm an outcast in my family, because I've got a big mouth.
Exactly. So with that in mind, please let me know when you want to have our kids over. I would love to have her. And to your listeners, it's a real pleasure to be speaking to you. There are many ways you can get involved with us. Go to our website. There's an info@africanleadershipacademy.org email. Get in touch with me. Just send an email to Frank. Call our switchboard. Say, hey, I need to speak to Frank about something.
But you know, and also I think the main thing also, which I, from my point of view, is that if you're not in a position to do it financially, you're still going to be gaining something from an experience. So whether it's visiting the campus, whether it's visiting the website, or just having dialogue and conversations on Twitter.
Absolutely.
You know, you'll be surprised at what you're going to be grasping and what passions are going to be ignited.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I always say, we all need to be thinking about how we're contributing to Africa's renaissance and the change of the African narrative. If you're struggling for that, ALA gives you a great opportunity to plug into an institution that will support that for you. And that you can do in many ways. If you have spoken about our application window being open, send us a couple of kids who you think should apply to the academy. Come and visit us to understand us better. And the best day to come is a Monday afternoon. You need to let us know in advance though, because we're a school, we need to make sure that, you know, security and stuff. But just go to the website, get in touch with us, see if you can come for assembly on a Monday afternoon, 2:00. All the kids run boards. So if you think you're going to sit on a board meeting, because all those boards, the business that kids run have to run board meetings, we're always looking for board members. By all means, volunteer your time. And the three ways, Rosie, you're absolutely correct. People can give back to the academy or get involved in the academy.
Yeah.
Treasure, time, or talent. Three T's.
Beautiful.
Okay. If you don't have money, you have time and talent to give and contribute to the young person's growth. By all means, our doors are open.
Yeah. Thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure. And of course, if you want to find out more information, I'm on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, under Rosie Mutene. I will gladly pass you on any information or any questions. He's active on Twitter. He's not, and he handles his account. So, and what is it? What is your Twitter handle?
F Aswani. At F Aswani.
At F Aswani.
Yeah.
Send a compliment, send a note, send a question. Even if you have something to criticize, which I don't think you will. But it's been an absolute pleasure having you in studio again. And to my listeners, thanks once again. It's all about achieving that African global excellence. My name is Rosie Mutene, and thank you for listening to my podcast, Pan-African Connect. CliffCentral.com